Welcome to the Sober Buddy Podcast, your boost of sober thinking and awesome life building. I'm Tara Zoe, CEO and co-founder here at Sober Buddy, and I am joined by David Wilson, aka Sober Dave, gray area drinking coach, best-selling author, ambassador for Alcohol Change UK, and host of the podcast One for the Road. I am excited to have this conversation with Dave. But first, if you have not gotten the Sober Buddy app and joined a group yet, you are missing out. Make sure you go get it. We are having dynamic groups twice a day, Monday through Friday, and it is changing people's lives. Come meet some people, get some tips for sobriety, and start to make those moves that are going to make your life better than it's ever been before. Welcome to the show, Dave.
Thank you, Tara. It's a real pleasure to join you today. Thanks for asking me.
Yes, I've been wanting to have you on for a while because I love your Instagram. I love watching your videos. And you're 4 years sober, correct?
I can't believe it, actually, but I've done it. So I feel really proud of myself, to be honest.
For sure. Are you going to do anything big for your 4 year?
No, I don't think so. I'd kind of keep it a little bit low key. I think it's important for people to see that it's possible, especially, you know, I'm a man of slightly older years, and I always say to people, you're never too old to change your life. You know, there's a lot of people my age that think they're stuck in this loop forever, and I like to prove to people that you're not. I was 54 when I stopped drinking, as you've just said on the intro, I've done quite a lot in that 4 years to change my life. Yeah. And it's an important message, I think.
And then just to clarify, you're sober from alcohol, just so that everyone out there knows what you're sober from. And like, when you got sober, what kind of method did you use to get sober?
Right in the beginning, it was like an epiphany that I've really got to do it now, or it's curtains for me, because I've been drinking for 40 years. My weight had spiraled out of complete control. You know, I was 127 kg. My blood pressure was life-threatening. My doctor said that I could drop down dead any day. My cholesterol was outrageous. I was on antidepressants, you know, everything. Acid reflux was awful. And then one day I just thought, you know, it's now or never. And I kind of winged it in the beginning. I white knuckled it, but then I was introduced to a sober event in London.
Okay.
And I plucked up the courage to go there, and I stood outside a bit like some of us who try AA, and we're like, oh, do we go in? Do we not? And that, and I paced up and down, and then I thought, do you know what? I'm going for it. And I went in and I met some incredible people, like of all walks of nature, all ages and whatever. And within half an hour, I felt really at home. And I got on the train after that and I thought, like, everyone's normal, because I didn't know what to expect, you know.
Yeah. I think that's common.
And it is common. And I was on the train and it gave me a real boost of, I can do this, you know. And then I kind of explored different resources, websites, Alcohol Change UK. And then I started getting involved with the sober community and started sharing my journey right from the beginning. And it was like literally from day 14, 15, 1 month sober. And I kind of find a niche because maybe it's who I am. You know, I'm a bit of a Cockney character in my 50s with tattoos, and I'm not, you know, like that matters, but I think people hooked into how honest I was about everything, you know, and it worked, and people started asking me questions, how am I doing it, and by giving back, gave back to me.
For sure.
And it made a big difference, and it encouraged me as well, and that's how I progressed, really.
Right. And so then, did you end up going back with that sober event? Did that end up becoming like you got together with those people again, or you found a group, or was it just kind of like an intro to like the sober world?
Well, it wasn't long after that I held my own sober event.
Love it.
How about that? So
you're
it
so
was
ambitious.
Same...
You just were like, I'm jumping in and I'm going to do the sober thing.
I did do it. And do you know what? I even had someone fly in from Germany that day and fly back to Germany that day just to be there. And there were about 80 people from all over the country. And I did a talk on the stage. I invited other peoples up there to share a bit of their journey and whatever. And at the end of it, it was just the best thing. And up to date now, I've done 5 events now.
Okay.
With live music, with speakers, amazing food. And it's all about getting the community together to meet people in the real life rather than looking at our phones.
Well, because we're connecting to all these people in the sober community on Instagram or social media. And it is interesting. I was just at another event and people were kind of from all over. And it was just like, it was like meeting their best friends in person for the first time. And it was so emotional and just such an incredible atmosphere when everybody came together in person.
It is. And like we also, I feel like I know you already. And it's so lovely. Your event was in New York, right?
Yes. I went to DopeyCon.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I know. It's amazing, isn't it? And you know, it's that whole thing. Connection's the opposite of addiction, you know, like connecting with people, especially like-minded people that get you, that, you know, you can just tell them your story and they just get it rather than you feeling judged or you know, shamed or whatever. And it's just, there's almost like an unspoken understanding with these guys, you know?
I totally understand that. We just kind of have a silent, like, just accept that acceptance is like a connection. It's really deep. It's a really like, it hits you in a different way. I agree with that.
It really does. Yeah.
And now you talk about in your book and then on your Instagram, I saw this too, but you talk about that you were drinking at 14 because you had a chronic feeling of rejection and an intense need for acceptance. And how has that changed since you got sober? Like, how have you solved that issue?
Well, I will say it was something I couldn't look at in the beginning. Mm-hmm. And when I coach people, I encourage them not to look too deeply into things. It's about, you know, I call it like the first stage of sobriety is actually to stop drinking.
Right.
and not to look too deep. And the second phase is to actually start to explore.
Right.
If you're ready to maybe look at reasons why. And some people aren't ready, you know.
Yeah, for sure.
But for me, it was connecting with myself. And when I stopped drinking, it was almost like I went back to the 14-year-old boy because there was some healing that needed to be doing there, you know. Mm-hmm. Like my mum left me when I was 14, but she didn't tell me. She left a letter on the table. So, you know, I was getting ready for school and I opened up the letter not knowing what it was. And it said, Dave, I'm leaving you. I'm not sure when I will be in touch, but it will be in some part of the near future. And like for days, it stunned me. I didn't know what was going on. Mm. And then shortly after that, my dad met someone as well. And then I felt like I lost my dad as well. So I felt really lonely and rejected and, you know, am I not lovable? Am I not, are they not proud of me? You know, is there something wrong with me? And then I got into the wrong crowd, possibly the right crowd at the time, because I became the drinker, not the fighter. I hated fighting, but I was the drinker, you know, so that I used to make the lads laugh and whatever. So that was the role I played for 40 years. So when I stopped, it felt like an actor being out of work, you know, because I had this role on the stage of Dave the drinker, you know, the one that is a legend. Whoa.
Yeah.
And then when I stopped, it was like, who am I?
Identity.
Yeah, I didn't know who I was, right? So I had to start getting in touch with myself and how I was feeling, who I am. And that was really difficult, right? Because we're used to blocking out our emotions, aren't we?
Yeah.
And 40 years of blocking out my emotions, all of a sudden it was like bang, straight in my face.
Mm.
But I chipped away day by day, bit by bit, sometimes half a day at a time. And gradually and slowly, I start to wake up and look in the mirror and think, do you know what? You're looking all right, mate, because I hated myself, you know, for who I've become. And then gradually I started to get to know myself a little bit. And I thought, do you know what? I'm not as loud as I thought I was.
Mm.
I like my own company more than I thought I did. And I don't need to be around all these people that I'm performing in front of because they're not my real friends anyway, you know? So by introducing myself to the sober community, I realized that they were listening to me. Mm. I was listening to them and we had such engaged conversation. And at the next day, we remembered the conversation.
Yeah.
So it felt more real, more, it had more depth to the friendship. And now, like, I haven't met everyone, but I was talking to Brad yesterday, you know, Brad McLeod.
Yes.
We had a chat on Zoom in that, and there's people in Australia because of my podcast. I've had guests from all over the world, and we stay in touch all the time. And some of those friendships are when I feel a bit down, I might reach out and go, can I have a little chat and that? Because we, as I said before, we've got that unspoken kind of respect, you know.
Right.
So now, like, my life feels a lot more full, a lot more enriched.
Yeah.
So that's part of the other amazing things of giving up the booze, you know. There's so many layers to it.
Isn't that, it's just crazy that this one thing can have so much power, you know, and just numb all these different areas of life that you're not thinking. It's not just like the drinking. It's like, it's numbing everything. It's, you know, it's like this big wall that's blocking connection. It's blocking self-awareness. It's blocking health. It's blocking all these different things. And then you get rid of it. And all of a sudden, all these things we didn't even realize would bloom or that were even there come out.
You know, I always relate it to a relationship, long-term relationship, because we all change as human beings and we all get older and we develop, we get different jobs, we move areas and whatever. And I look at it like a relationship that always starts off fresh, happy, you're always in bed, you're always going away for weekends and having parties and whatever. Gradually through the years, things change. And then for me, alcohol become a really toxic, controlling, narcissistic relationship where it will control me every single day. You know, in the morning I will wake up and say, nah, I'm going nowhere near her, absolutely not. Lunchtime, as we all know, start to change a little bit in the afternoon. It was like she was texting me, come on, Dave. Come on, come and see me tonight. And I was like, oh, I could do, I suppose. You know, and then you go round and round and round and round. So I had to kind of break that tie with the relationship. And that's visually, I looked at it as the relationship that really, really helped me to understand it, is that I need to take control and I need to get myself out of this relationship and ignore the texts, the phone calls, which are the cravings, you know, and move away. And the more I moved away, the more I didn't miss that relationship. And that mindset sort of worked for me, you know.
Kind of going back into like your coaching and your work with all of that. And I mean, obviously anybody who's listening can understand why he would be such an incredible coach. But you talk a lot, like you focus a lot on gray area drinking. So can you like explain to us the definition of gray area drinking, just in case anybody's not aware?
Yeah, so grey area drinking is a relatively new thing. And it really makes sense, right? Because in old money, right, you either drank or you didn't. And if you had a problem with drink, you're an alcoholic. And that word works for some people. They identify as an alcoholic, and that's fine. It didn't work for me because I didn't like the label. I didn't like the disease theory. You know, So I even look like I'm not in recovery. I look like I'm in rediscovery because everything I'm doing, is a discovery, right? And grey area drinking is the space in between. So it's people that don't drink every day, or if they do, it's just a couple of glasses a day and then that's it. Or they might go a week without a drink, yet they might binge at weekends. Or they might go 2 or 3 weeks and then binge or start drinking. But if you said to them, just stop then, they go, oh, I wouldn't be able to do that. So there's a whole space in between that so many people feel, that gap. And when I say to them, I think you're a greater drinker, it's softer for them to identify to that phrase. And then they feel like they can work with that rather than I'm an alcoholic and I sit on a bench with a brown bag. I've had it. I'm too far into it. You know, and there's so many people that fit into that category of gray area drinking. You know, there's so many.
Well, what made you kind of go in that direction? Just because, I mean, you're describing yourself and you weren't a gray area drinker. Even though you didn't identify as an alcoholic, it was a huge part of your life. So what like drew you towards coaching gray area?
It was interesting actually, because I was approached by a penguin to write a book, right?
Okay.
And I did the proposal and it took me forever. And they were trying to change it right from the beginning. And I thought, I don't like this. I want to write my own book, you know. Mm-hmm. And at the end, they said, what qualifications have you got? And I said, well, I've done a peer mentoring. I've done this, that, and whatever. But it wasn't enough for them, right? So I approached Jolene Park, who I've met before. Mm-hmm. And she was just starting this grey area drinking course. And she said, look, you can catch up if you jump on it now, right? And I did. And I really, really enjoyed it. And I learned a lot from it. So I did that course. Now I'm an accredited coach. But also, when you get to the stage of where I was, which was a litre of vodka a night or 4 bottles of wine, that can take years of qualification to get there. And also, you know, medical detox, specialist care, really. And I thought, I can't enter that world. I know about that world and I can use that experience of my own life experience to help people with, but there's no way I'm qualified to coach people with that. So I decided gray area drinking was something more that would sit more comfortably with me, really.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. And how has that journey been? Have you had some amazing experiences with clients?
Yeah. Yeah. Do you know, one of the best ones was a guy, obviously can't mention who he is, but
yeah.
He was a day drinker, which is a little bit out of the comfort zone of where I would go. But I decided to work with him for 3 months, and his little girl at 3 years old wouldn't go near him. Because he was unpredictable. You know, 1 minute it'd be over lovey-dovey and another minute it'd be really irritable and I'm busy, you know, and plus the smell of alcohol in his breath. Anyway, a few months later, I received a photograph from his wife of him in the garden planting a rose bush and the little girl had the watering can and she said, you have no idea how happy this makes me. They are literally like two peas in a pod now.
Wow.
Where their relationship is repaired, which is brilliant because like she's gonna grow up not knowing what it was like her dad drinking, and also their marriage was repaired as well because he was present all the time. And that, you know, that work in 3 months was amazing for me, and that's why I love doing my job, because the rewards you get, what you see, you know.
And you did write a book. You talked about doing that and getting your coaching, but you wrote a book and you just published it, and it's called One for the Road. Tell us a little bit about the book.
Yeah, well, do you know what? The irony of that was when I was drinking, I used to joke with my friends saying, oh God, I could write a book about this one day, about all my antics and my experiences. And there I've written a book, right? And I wanted it to be slightly different than the usual quitlet, which is like how to stop drinking. So I've weaved in a bit of my life story, my childhood, why I believe I started drinking. And a lot of people relate to it as well, about a dysfunctional childhood. But I've also included some life stories, which is, you know, off the back of my podcast as well. So there's Sarah Dray. She talks about what it's like growing up to be a child of an alcoholic. She had to turn the life support machine off on her dad. And then she kind of thought, what do I do with this after? And she decided to work in this field. She's done an amazing TED talk. And there's other guys on there that I've woven in their life story. And there's also lots of methods of how to stop drinking, you know, without judgment. We're all different. We've all got our own relationship with alcohol. And I kind of had this vision of when people put the book down, they go, do you know what? I'm going to give it a go. You know, and with the reviews, that's what I'm finding now, that people are saying that it's quite different from other Quitlets, and refreshingly different and whatever. But I tell you what, Tara, it is a journey in itself writing a book.
I was just going to
Oh my
ask you, like, what
God.
was that process like? Because that can put you through a lot. So tell me about that.
It was 2 years of digging up stuff. I even put a letter through my old address of me growing up because I wanted to go back into the house that I grew up and got the letter from my mum. That's how invested I was in it, and they didn't reply to me, so I was pretty upset about that. But it brings up stuff that like if anyone journals, like listening to this podcast, you know, it can bring up all sorts of stuff that are buried deep in the sort of, you know,
So writing the book in and of itself is taking you kind of through this therapeutic journey. Was it cathartic and healing?
It was cathartic. It healed lots of areas for me. Very nerve-wracking though. Like when I published it, it was a day after a lovely queen died. So there was a real sort of feeling of remorse, and you know, it was terrible timing for me to release a book, but it was already out there then. Do you know, there's nothing I could do about it. But you know, I mean, I lay my life down every day on Instagram and in my podcast, but when you write a book out, it's in print and it's out there
You
forever.
can't. I understand that. You can't shift it or change it or delete it.
That's right. So it's quite a sort of bearing the soul to the whole world thing, you know, but it's that thing. If it helps one person, then I've done my job, and so far it's helping lots. So I do feel proud of it. And let's see, there might be a book two one day, but I'm going to have a bit of a breather now because it's, you know, recording. I've just finished season seven of my podcast, and as you know, that's quite a lot of work as
It
well.
is. I know. I
So
don't think people realize how much work a podcast
it really is, yeah. But that's cathartic as well because I do life stories. And you get to hear people's versions of it, and that, and it's like all the time my brain's ting, ting, ting. I relate to that. I relate to that. You know, it's fascinating to learn about different people from all over the planet. You know, what they've been through it's amazing.
It is amazing what people can overcome, what a human can overcome, and how they can come back. You know, there's so many. I mean, I've interviewed multiple people now who were unhoused, you know, and they lived sometimes years. I mean, I just interviewed someone who lived in a porta potty for 2 years, you know, and now he's working in Hollywood on, you know, on big shows and as a videographer. And it's like, that's crazy. We can come back from so many things.
But do you know what? Do you know why? It's because we're incredibly resilient. What we've been through in our lives with this terrible addictive drug is we've had many rock bottoms, most of us, you know, and we've learned to be resilient. So that's what people need to hear. You've got more ability than you believe in yourself. You know, you might think you can't do it, but just think about what you've survived in the past and use that to push yourself forward because that's what's helped me. You know, I've been in a million scrapes. I've ended up homeless as well, and I've kept a job. You know, I've run my own businesses, turning up, sleep. I've slept in a van for a month, you know, like washing in the local toilets. And so when you look at all that, how you survive over the years, when you stop drinking, you can really use those skills in your favor.
Because it builds something in you, it builds just resilience. A grit. Yeah, like a resilience in you. And you really can. And I think that's why that's the big thing about the sober community. Again, like you were saying, that there's those understandings and just any community, even trauma recovery and any kind of time where people are actively working to heal themselves and to grow. Yeah. You know, you tend to have just a totally different culture, a totally different communication. Like you said, even just remembering the conversation.
Yeah.
That alone is like going to connect you more. But then that the conversation is about real things. It's not just a projection. Yeah. It's this like, hey, this is what I'm going through. This is my humanity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And feeling real empathy for it rather than like shallowness and, you know, I can really feel your pain there, you know, and it's the transference between you both, you know, especially when you meet in real life and you've been chatting online for 2 years and all of a sudden they're right in front of you and it's like, come here.
Yeah.
Give me a kiss. Give me a hug. Do you know what I mean? It's incredible.
It is. And it's funny when COVID happened, I had someone say to me like, oh, you know, we're doomed, like social media and COVID, like we're losing our connection. And I'm thinking, no, humanity, they'll find a way back to each other. We need to be with people. We need each other. Yeah. And even through COVID and even through everything that we've been through, we're all finding our way back to each other. And I think it's just community is so valuable and important and essential.
Absolutely. And this is why your app's so brilliant, you know, because it can connect people from all over the world.
People want to connect because that is the thing. You know, in the end, we all have to do our own work and there's all skills that we can learn and all the different things. But in the end, we need to connect, you know.
We do, 100%.
Well, I have enjoyed so much connecting with you today and finally getting to have a conversation with you and talk to you. And I had in my notes to talk about your dog on Instagram because you always have your little dog. And
oh,
so
Rose,
cute.
Yeah.
Rose, she's so cute.
She's in the other room now because she's a little bit hyperactive. So I had to have a little word with her and I've given her a couple of her favorite treats, but she's becoming a celebrity in herself.
I know.
You know, I did that live-a-thon and at the end she was like doing somersaults and everyone, get out of the way, Dave, I want to see your dog. She's
We're so dog obsessed now, I feel like that's what we all care about when we watch videos. I'm like, oh, look at these cute dogs.
I know. She is a sweetie. She's only 6 months old.
Oh,
she's a beaut, yeah.
Oh, yeah, she's a sweetie pie. So does she chew things up?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, my dog was horrible. And when he turned a year, everything calmed down. But, oh, it was like...
Yeah, well, see that lovely plant you got behind you?
Yeah.
I have one like that, and she's eating all the roots.
Oh,
so it's just completely died now.
Oh, my gosh. My dog would flip over my area rugs and pull out the threads.
Yeah.
From the back.
I know.
I was like, oh my gosh.
I know. At least I've only got 6 months then before she starts biting my fingers because that's her favorite trick now. Yeah.
Oh, that's so funny. Well, we enjoy your page. And I'm going to put links to everything of Dave's in the show notes because he has incredible resources. If you even go to just his Instagram page, I looked at your bio link and you have so many amazing resources there. I love that. And I love everything you're doing. And everyone, check out his book, his new one, One for the Road, and his podcast.
Oh, thank you.
And
thank
get
you
fed.
So much for inviting me. I've really enjoyed it.
Oh, I'm glad. And we will, everybody who's listening, just know that your life can be better than before. Just take it one moment, one step at a time. Get curious. And you've got this.